This is lecture number 14 on Jeremiah by Alan McCrae. This is the final lecture on Jeremiah by Alan McCrae. Lecture number 14. In reference to the Lachish letters, some of them were written during the final conquest of the city. And one of them says, quote, "We see the lights of Lachish, but we cannot see the lights of Azekah," end quote. And I mentioned a few things about this a few minutes ago, where Jeremiah speaks of the time when all the cities were taken by the Babylonians, except Azekah and Lachish, and this is in Jeremiah 34, verse 7. Inevitably, in those days, cities were largely built on large hills and high hills, and the people would watch for the lights from the city to see whether the city was still continuing its struggle against the Babylonians, or whether it had already fallen. Student question, which chapter is significant for Lachish? Dr. McCrae's response, well, I had a note here. I thought referring to the precise verse, but I don't see it at present. But it's very easy in a concordance to look up Lachish in Jeremiah. I believe there is only one reference to this city in Jeremiah, though there is more about the city in Isaiah because of the attacks of Sennacherib a century and a half earlier. Here in Jeremiah, there's only this one reference. That what's interesting is that Jeremiah refers to both Lachish and to Azekah, which are the two that are mentioned in this particular letter, and also mentioned together in the Lachish letters. Yes, it is Jeremiah chapter 34, verse 7. Well, let's go on. This section then runs from chapter 39, in the middle of the chapter, through chapter 45, or perhaps 44, because 45 goes back to tell of God's blessings to Baruch and the promise which continued all through this period. In this section, we have a very interesting story of what happened. This narrative is very interesting to see as to the events, and I'm just going to be very brief in summarizing them here, but what happened after the fall of Jerusalem. I mentioned at the end of the last hour that we were told that Nebuchadnezzar had taken a personal interest in Jeremiah. And Jeremiah was told that he could come to Babylon if he wanted, where the captives were already being taken, or he could go back to Jerusalem, which had been destroyed by the Babylonians. He could go back to the land of Judah, or he could stay with the governor who had been appointed, that is, Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam. He could stay with him. Jeremiah decided to stay in the land. We read about this in Jeremiah chapter 40, verse 6. And so then we read that the Babylonians appointed this man, Gedaliah, as governor. And then some of the very loyal, nationalistic Jews decided that they wanted to kill him. After all, in their mind, he was a traitor, serving as governor under the Babylonians who had just destroyed their city. And they wanted to kill him, and Jeremiah warned them about it, but they would not listen. They came anyways. They attacked Gedaliah, who refused to believe such a thing would happen, and did not use proper security and precautions. And indeed, they killed him. And then we find a number of others that they killed at that time. And then they reasoned, we've got to flee to Egypt. We must flee because when the king of Babylon hears that we killed the governor that he appointed, he will want to kill us. We must flee down to Egypt. We find this in chapter 43, verses 1 and following. And it is a theme that runs through the book of Jeremiah, as it does in a large part of Isaiah, that it is foolish to put confidence in Egypt to protect you, from Assyria in the case of Isaiah, and from Babylon in the case of Jeremiah. The king of Egypt is interested only in his own objectives. He will not give you proper support, and he cannot now because God has turned over the world for a time to Nebuchadnezzar and to Babylon. And so here we find that Jeremiah warned the people, and he said, do not flee to Egypt. He said, if you flee to Egypt, God will not protect you there. He said, stay in the land. And he also continued by saying, you will be able to live out your life here. And this again is Jeremiah chapter 42, verse 12. Well, they couldn't believe that because they thought that the Babylonians would certainly punish the whole group of them for what had happened with the murder of Gedaliah. But Jeremiah said, stay here and God will protect you. Now, the actual assassins had fled into the land of Ammon, so these to whom Jeremiah was speaking were more or less innocent bystanders. Jeremiah chapter 41, verse 15. But he warned them not to go to Egypt. But they picked up and went to Egypt and even carried Jeremiah with them. They took him to Egypt along with them. And then we find in chapter 43 that Jeremiah told them in Egypt, "The danger you fear here in Judah will overtake you in Egypt." And we read in chapter 43, verse 8, that in Tahpanhes, the place in Egypt where the Jews had settled, and I'm quoting here, "The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, 'While the Jews are watching, take some large stones with you and bury them in clay in the brick pavement near the entrance to Pharaoh's palace in Tahpanhes. And say to them, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. I will send my servant Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and I will set his throne over these stones I have buried here. He will come and attack Egypt, bringing death to those destined for death, captivity to those destined for captivity, the sword to those destined for the sword." End quote. And chapter 43, verse 12 ends, quote, "As a shepherd wraps his garment around him, so will he wrap Egypt around himself and depart from there unscathed." End quote. That's an interesting phrase, that he will depart from there unscathed. Now, if Nebuchadnezzar conquered Egypt and made it part of his kingdom, as he did to Jerusalem, you would naturally expect that he would take it over and make it part of his kingdom. He would take people into exile, the same as he did to Jerusalem. But to say that he will, again I'm quoting, "depart from there unscathed," end quote, suggests that he will conquer it. And as Jeremiah told them, "The evil you feared here in Judah will overtake you in Egypt, but Nebuchadnezzar will depart from there unscathed," suggests that he won't be able to establish a continuing control there. That's what actually happens, by the way. Nebuchadnezzar, years after this time, 20 years or so after this time, Nebuchadnezzar made an expedition to Egypt. He overcame the Egyptian army and went through much of Egypt, pillaging and ruining various things, but did not have the force to hold it. But he left unscathed. No harm came to him, but he did not take over Egypt the way he took over Jerusalem and Judah. So in these few words, we show the accuracy of the prediction that God gave. God told the prophet that they would not gain anything by going to Egypt. Nebuchadnezzar would actually conquer Egypt, but he suggests that it would not be a continuing conquest. Now, this section, then, I think, is a very interesting section. There's a very little in it beyond what I said that needs time and thought to understand it. It ends with chapter 45, the promise given to Baruch, and then chapters 46 to 51 form a unit by themselves. We have similar units in Isaiah and in Ezekiel. It is a unit in which the prophet turns his attention away from the situation of his associates, the situation in Judah and Israel, and he turns his attention to the surrounding nations, the ungodly nations which God has used as his instrument to punish his people, but which themselves deserve no credit for having done so. They have not done it to do God's will. They've done it in order to achieve their own objectives. But they have done it with great cruelty, and God says that they are going to be punished for this cruelty. And so in Jeremiah 46 to 51, we have a very different type of material than what we had earlier. Chapter 46 is quite interesting because we know that it was given early in Jeremiah's ministry. You find in chapter 46, verse 2, and I'm quoting, "This is the message against the army of Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, which was defeated at Carchemish on the Euphrates River by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah." End quote. And the chapter describes in very vivid ways the overthrow of the army of Egypt. This is the army, you know, which at the beginning of Jeremiah's ministry had killed Josiah, the good king of Judah. They had proceeded north to try to help the king of Assyria, but the Babylonians, who had revolted against Assyria, defeated the Egyptians completely. This is within the next few years after Josiah's death. And this describes how pell-mell the Egyptians fled down through the coastal plain back to Egypt. And we can imagine Jeremiah up there in the hill country of Judah seeing the fleeing army and describing here how God was punishing the Egyptians, and then going on to tell how he would do it again in later times and how Nebuchadnezzar would come against the Egyptians. So in this section, from chapter 46 to 51, we have the punishment against a number of foreign countries given. There's much detail in it that would be interesting to look at, but it is a different sort of thing from what we've been having. And in a short course like this, there's hardly any time to look into this section at length. Perhaps we'll take just a second on the denunciation of Babylon, with which this section ends. God tells of the punishment to come on the Babylonians and on Babylon. And in chapter 51, verse 41, he says how Shishak will be captured. Quote, "The boast of the whole earth sees, what a whore Babylon will be among the nations," end quote. Now, this word Shishak corresponds to nothing that is known in ancient history, and it is here given in connection with fighting against Babylon, and it occurs once before in the book of Jeremiah, specifically chapter 25, verse 26. Now, it is generally believed that it was sort of a cryptogram for Babylon. Instead of taking the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet, Beit, which is used to spell Babylon, the writers took the next to the last, or second from the last letter for the Hebrew alphabet, Shin, and made it Shishak. And so it is a cryptogram for Babylon to put in so that if the Babylonians read this passage, they would not feel that it was a treasonable document. Now, this last part in Jeremiah has many references to Babylon, so the idea could not apply here, except for a reminiscence of the use of Shishak once done earlier in the book of Jeremiah. So this term Shishak was used to hide from the Babylonians this opposition to them. I'm a bit curious as to why that would be used in 51 to hide the meaning from the Babylonians when everywhere else in that chapter it just comes right out and says Babylon. Shishak, as I mentioned, is used in chapter 25 to hide the meaning of Babylon. And then in chapter 51, written later when there was no longer any need to hide it, I think it was just a reminiscence of its earlier use. There was no need later on to hide the fact that Babylon was indeed the culprit that is being mentioned. And so I think that it is a reminiscence of its earlier use, and it is generally considered to be that. Well, it would be very interesting to study the details of these denunciations of the nations to see, as in verse 43 of chapter 51, specific predictions that have been fulfilled in later times. There aren't many of those. Most of them were fulfilled in later times, but we don't have any evidence as to how these predictions were fulfilled. But it would be very interesting, but quite different from what we have covered mostly in this course. So, unfortunately, we don't have time in this course to deal with this interesting subject. I think one of the most interesting things in the book of Jeremiah is the length of Jeremiah, the fact that this man, who was called by God to be his spokesman, stood unflinchingly for God's message through such great difficulty with almost the whole nation turned against him. He had kings trying to kill him, leaders of the country trying to kill him, people considering him as a traitor. Yet he gave God's message to them. He presented God's word and took great dangers upon himself. The few passages in the earlier part give us a glimpse of his mind and his feelings. We know how deeply he felt being misunderstood this way, being thought that he was callous and that he did not love his people. The book of Lamentations, as we've mentioned before, shows us how very deeply he really did love his people. But though he loved his people, he loved God more, and he stood for God's truth even when it resulted in his being misunderstood, his being abused, and even his being persecuted. And time after time, it seems as though he wouldn't live long. He saw others who gave similar messages being killed, but God had promised in chapter 1 that he would make Jeremiah like an iron fortress. He would make him a bronze wall against his enemies. He would protect him, and God indeed protected him throughout his whole ministry. Then after the downfall of the city, you see him telling the people not to kill Gedaliah, telling them that God would punish them for it. And yet they do it, and then they want to go to Egypt, and we find him telling them, "Don't go. You will be able to continue here in Judah, and you will not be killed if you stay here. But if you run off to Egypt, the disaster you fear here in Judah will overtake you in Egypt." And yet they not only run to Egypt, but they grab Jeremiah and take him with them. And so he is dragged off to Egypt with them. and there in Egypt he continues his prophesying, though he doubtless had more leisure and probably then wrote the Book of Lamentations with its wonderful poetry. Lamentations is clearly a worked-out arrangement, so different from the rather haphazard order that we find in the midst of all this distraction that was unavoidable in connection with the writing of the rest of the book of Jeremiah. Well, let's end with some of the main lessons of Jeremiah for today. Jeremiah gives us many instances of God's wonderful predictions, instances of God's wonderful power, and one of the greatest things in the book is the picture of this man who stood true to God, even when just about everything seemed to be against him. And it's a wonderful thing to realize that though Jeremiah must have been detested by most of his people, yet God raised up enough people who thought of Jeremiah as a true prophet and who highly regarded him, that they even kept his life and they preserved him against all dangers. And they included him, that is his work, in the books that they passed on, which they understood to indeed be God's word. And we don't know what's ahead for us, but I think that it is good for us to be prepared. We don't know how much longer we'll have freedom that we now possess to give out the word of God. But we can know that if God was with Jeremiah, he will be with all of us who stay true to him and who put his word ahead of other things. And so I think that one of the great things in the book of Jeremiah is the example that he gives us. We have the assurance that even if we are like the prophet whom Jehoiakim sent down to Egypt for and brought back and killed, we can still be a witness for God. God called Stephen to be a wonderful witness to him, even though Stephen was stoned. But God protected Paul through all of his difficulties. We don't know what God's will is for any one of us, but we know that whatever it is, if we're true to him, his will and purpose is best and will stand whatever happens. We'll be able to look back at the end and see how God has led through all of it. Now I think that Jeremiah is tremendously important to each one of us for this reason. Specifically, God's faithfulness. This ends the 14th and last lecture of Alan A. McRae's Lessons on Jeremiah.